serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 94-year-old Glenn Stenson of Denver, Colorado. If you played high school football, basketball, or baseball in Colorado, there's a chance Glenn might have officiated one of your ball games. He did all three sports for decades in addition to coaching and teaching. But first, he had to make it through World War II. A corpsman aboard the hospital ship USS Tranquility, he told us about nearly a week spent helping survivors of the tragic sinking of the USS Indianapolis. And I've got a few more questions about that. I do want to suggest, if you haven't yet read the New York Times bestseller Indianapolis by Lynn Vinson and Sarah Vladek, it is outstanding, and it'll give you even greater context to what Glenn's sharing today.
You mentioned the secrecy aspect. Was there anything that you guys gleaned in that 6 days around the survivors about what had happened?
None. We just knew that they'd been torpedoed. We didn't know about the A-bomb or any of that. So we were just as innocent babes in the wood, just like the kids that were survivors.
So I'm just guessing it must have been fascinating for you in all the years that followed as information came out and you learn about the shark attack and you learn about the significance of the mission and all that.
I had the privilege of attending a couple of many reunions and getting to know some of those guys. So the ones that I got to know, I think there's one left. And they had some very interesting stories. And, of course, we were fortunate that the president of the Indianapolis Survivors Association lived here in the Denver area all these years, and he and I used to go to schools talking to kids about different things about the Indianapolis and World War II, and then Paul Murphy. Mm-hmm. And he just passed away a couple years ago.
I'm glad that you shared that. So you mentioned going to the reunions. What was that like when you met some of these guys all these years after the war?
I would find out which ones were on the Tranquility, and we'd have a visit. And, of course, one guy always said, man, the Tranquility, that was the ship with all those beautiful women. He was a little guy from Virginia. I can't think of his name.
Well, most people don't have that opportunity. I mean, of all the medical folks in the war who treated so many people, usually they don't know if someone lived or died or what their life turned out to be. To see these guys who you helped save in a real crisis situation, I'm guessing that must have been satisfying for you.
Well, yes, and there is a scholarship fund out of Wisconsin that was started for the benefit of the kids and grandchildren of survivors in Indianapolis, and I think it's worthwhile. And I have supported that scholarship fund for years, and some of those guys passed their history down pretty good.
When I hear you say that, I guess what strikes me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like seeing them back in 1945 and understanding some of what they'd gone through stirred some real compassion inside of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, always will.
But you weren't done, as you said. You race back up, and you don't make it to Tokyo Bay because they don't need you anymore.
Well, we had got our rudder on our ship damaged in a typhoon. They felt that we couldn't steer well enough to go into Little Tokyo Bay, so they sent us back down to Okinawa to get some kids out of a hospital, and they sent another hospital ship in that ended up getting the old captured general from Corregidor. They got him. I would love to have got him.
Well, hearing your sentiments at the start of the war, I'm sure you would have in that circumstance, but I can't gloss over that comment either. If your rudder got bent in a typhoon, you must have felt that typhoon a little bit.
Some kids at the Air Force Academy asked me a couple of years ago, what experience did you have on a hospital ship? And as a corpsman, it was most dangerous. And being we were lit 24 hours a day and had a few kamikazes take a shot at us at Okinawa. And I said, to be real frankly, I was so afraid. I was afraid we were going to roll over in that typhoon with 800 kids. And I said, you know, that night I made a very definite commitment to my God. And these kids, there's about 40 Air Force kids around me, and they said, thank you, sir, for mentioning the word God. That's the position they're in today.
So the typhoon was?
That was before we went to Peleliu. It was while we were at Okinawa during the fighting, what was going on. But we'd had that damaged rudder, and I guess didn't realize how bad it was until we got into dry dock for a week in Pearl Harbor one time, and they found it.
And I want to come back to the typhoon in a second, but I don't want to forget something else you said. You had a couple kamikazes come close to the Tranquility?
No, they didn't get, they were heading at us, but we had to stay at least 10 miles from all other ships because we were lit. Mm-hmm. And they had about five little destroyer escorts that circled us constantly, and these kamikazes never got within 5 miles of us.
So they were heading your way because they could see your lights, but they got shot down.
They did get a couple hospital ships. They really nailed one bad in the Philippines.
Yeah, the big red cross on the side wasn't going to save you, huh?
No, it was a target.
And the typhoon, where were you while your ship is going through this typhoon?
I went down and got my bunk. I was hanging on for dear life because that was a horrible night. Thank God we had a good captain. He kept the ship pointed in the right direction all night long, and we could hear that propeller come out of the water and go flop, 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 back down in the water. And if we'd ever got caught sideways in those big swells, we'd have rolled over and been gone.
But it had to be a pretty jiggly ride for you in that bed.
Not bad. Dusk us out, praying.
You were praying. That sounds like a desperate prayer.
Well, it was. St. Elmo, patron saint of the water, calling this thing down.
It sounds like you weren't just praying for yourself.
Oh, there's a lot of kids.
You're thinking about 800 wounded.
Well, plus the crew.
Uh-huh. And I've talked to a lot of guys who've shared, you know, they made a bargain with God. Louis Zamperini comes to mind. A lot of people know his story.
I met Lou Zamperini at one time.
Uh-huh.
I was running a quarter mile and a half mile in college, and we had the regional AAU and Olympic trials at DU. They brought Lou in as a guest.
And I don't want to pry. Don't share anything you don't want to. But when you tell me something like that, I'm interested in how that has translated for the last 75 years. So this is 1945. You're making a deal with God. What was the fine print? What was the bargain you made?
Serve him. So all the work I've done in my life, all the jobs I've had have always been a service-type job, whether it's teaching school, running a park and recreation district, or being a field representative for the American Cancer Society. Those things have been a service. And then the work I do at the church and here at the American Legion, I've spent many, many hours working with veterans, helping veterans out. And then one of the things I really enjoy doing is going to schools and talking to school kids. This last Veterans Day, for instance, I talked to over 1,000 school kids in about 3 days. So that's my joy, is going back to see the kids.
How long have you been doing that?
Oh, I've been doing that, I guess, probably the last 35 years more than before.
Wow. How long are you going to keep doing it?
Well, as long as I can walk 2.5-3 miles a day, I'll keep going back.
And at 94, you're still on that pace. Well, and I guess I can't ask you those questions without asking, especially since I know there are a lot of young people listening right now. When you go speak to these big crowds of school kids who, I mean, they're the same age you were when you went into the Navy, or maybe some are the same age when you heard about three guys from your hometown dying at Pearl Harbor on the Arizona. What's the message that you share with those young people?
Well, basically, be honest, be loyal, look out for one another. I get questions, you know, every older kids, middle school, high school, what do you think about the A-bomb? And I have to tell a little different story. The A-bomb was horrible, but this kid said, what do you think about the A-bomb? And I said, I have to tell you my side of it, the way I see it, because nobody talks about it. A-bomb is horrible. We might have had to drop another one if we had it. But the big thing was the Japanese government, the emperor, knew that if we ever started to invade, his island would be firebombed flat by General LeMay's bombers. Firebombs. We had already destroyed half of Tokyo with firebombs.
Mm-hmm.
We'd destroyed another 13 villages with firebombs. It was going to be horrible. We'd have killed millions and millions more with firebombs than we ever did with the A-bomb. And these kids will look at me kind of, we didn't know that. It's not in their book.
And, of course, famously, they estimated upwards of 1 million American casualties if that invasion had taken place as well, which would have been more than twice what had already happened in the war to that point in all fronts.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things come to mind, and we haven't even touched on everything you've done after the war in education as a PE teacher, as a wrestling coach, cross-country coach, football coach, name the sport. You coached it. You officiated it, which means you have great patience if you were an official for that many years in that many sports.
Don't tell my wife about patience.
When you look back, and you just told us, you know, you shared your heart to serve others, your fellow veterans, to serve future generations. What are you most proud of, or what are you most thankful for?
That I did it honestly, that I did it loyally, and I did it out of my own heart.
And when I asked you what you share with those kids, you focused on character. You focused on the things that you would want them to emulate. When it comes to understanding the history, which I can tell you know as well as anybody. You lived a lot of it, but you've learned a lot of the stuff you didn't live firsthand. What do you think the young people alive today and future generations of Americans need to know about your generation and what you all did?
Well, first of all, our nation's built on history. The world is built on history. But unfortunately, in order to water down and get these kids into this modern-day social life of political correctness and that type of thing, we have thrown the key things in history that made our nation break. The kids don't know it. They don't get it. And the only way they can get it is if we veterans can get to these schools and talk to the kids. I talked to them about bullying even. Last Veterans Day, I was in the elementary school and I had a bunch, 12 other veterans with me, there with their grandkids in the school and one thing or another. And that day, I don't know why, it hit me. I said, okay, all you kids stand up, raise your right hand. No, son, your right hand. That's some little kids with the left. I say it after me and the veterans will. And we did the oath that they take to go into the service. I said, when you grow up and go into the service, this is what you will say. And our color guard was there and they said, it was amazing to watch the reaction of those kids. It was just something I did on a spur of the moment.
Well, and if there's anything that I left out, you know, feel free to add it in. But I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country.
Paul, I appreciate what you're doing to help spread the word. I'd love to do those.
Well, I realize there's one other thing, well, two now, because I saw your honor flight pin on your hat. But one that I wanted to ask you about, your father went in the Navy ahead of you, beat you to the punch. The whole duration of World War II, you guys saw each other exactly once.
Once. That was when I had boot camp leave, and he was on his way to Hawaii, and then to Kwajalein.
So you both came home back to Holyoke at the same time?
Yeah, except he kind of got mad at me. I walked in. It was June 28th. I'll never forget it. I said, happy birthday, Dad. He says, what's the matter with you? My birthday is June 24th. Never forgot that.
How do you think he felt about you being out there risking your life?
I think he worried. Of course, both he and I, our thoughts were on Mom at home with those kids. Again, out of the Depression, not a lot of money, and her with five kids and Dad's Navy allotment. I was going to try and save some money with my extra I had in the service, and Mom would write me a letter, and she'd say, sorry, Junior, I had to use your money. So I come home in the service without any savings. But it meant my brothers and sisters had food. So, sadly, our family wasn't the only one in that boat, I'm sure.
Yeah. And of the six kids, five of you became teachers.
Yes.
What was your getting back to Holyoke, your homecoming, what was that like?
Well, I got off the bus 8 o'clock in the morning and my duffel bag and my trumpet and walked home, and I was still in my Navy uniform. And Dad was in his Navy uniform. I said, what are you doing? He says, don't change clothes. And I said, why? He says, we have a military funeral this morning. You're going to have to play taps. So that was my, I had a chance hardly to say hi to Mom or anything. So we had this, but it was a dear friend of mine that had got pneumonia on a troop ship coming home in the Pacific and died.
Died on his way home from the war.
Yeah.
Awful. And you had to go over there and play taps on the spot.
Yeah, and I played taps for a lot of funerals through the years. Down in Rocky Ford, where I was teaching, coaching, the principal come down to the field house and say, got to run out to cemetery right quick and play taps. I'll cover your class for you. I'd go out and blow taps, come back.
I saw on your World War II veteran hat, you've got a nice red pin that says Rocky Mountain Honor Flight.
Yes.
What was that like for you to go back and see the National World War II Memorial?
Wonderful. In my honor flight, we had 12 Air Force cadets from the academy with us that were to interview us and do historical studies. So we spent quite a bit of time there at the World War II Memorial, and the 4,000 gold stars really sank in. Then there was a middle school band from Iowa playing a concert, and that helped kind of stir the juice a little more. Went on, and most people don't realize it. When they go there, there's a kiosk up above that you can go in. If you were in the service, you can get registered your name and your address and everything. My dad and I are both in that kiosk. Then, of course, we went around at the other monuments and one thing another, and after we'd been up the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, we were around waiting for our bus to come. Kids from middle schools, California and Georgia and all that. Sir, can we have our pictures taken with you guys? Can we shake your hands? Would you sign our programs? And I finally said, I'm going to cross the road. I knew why I was going. Got over there, and here's this ordinary tomb with a lot of flowers by it. I'm standing there, and the kid says, what are this? And I said, see that name? Well, what about it? I said, that name is Audie Murphy, most decorated soldier out of World War II. Those kids, then they wanted to know about Audie Murphy.
One more question on that. You said those 4,000 gold stars really sink in. Of course, they represent 406,000 Americans who died in the war. So I'm just curious, was there anyone or anything specific that came to mind while you were staring at that giant wall of gold stars?
Oh, I could see pictures I served with, pictures of all the guys from home that had probably gone to service, because we had a pictorial book put out home of all the wee guys in the service. It's all those visions, just a lot of things run through your mind. You can't really narrow in on one.
And I'm just curious, I'm not putting words in your mouth again, but you told me about during the typhoon what you were doing. You were talking to God. I'm just curious, of being at a place like the World War II Memorial, do you end up talking to God some more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and more so over at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. All those monuments are wonderful. World War II, Vietnam. I tell everybody that the one memorial you want to see at night is the Korean Memorial. The way they treated those statues, and they light them up at night, it's like a bunch of ghosts coming across the field at you.
It's haunting. It really is.
It is haunting, yeah. I have always said that we waste a lot of money in this country, and we really blow it on lousy educational plans that go nowhere. I would a lot rather see our Congress give each state so many millions of dollars a year to send every middle school to Washington, D.C. or to Boston. They do that in Europe. If I ever won the big $350 million lotto, that's what.
I'm not sure which option the odds favor more, that funding source or the congressional idea, but the source of this idea and the example he continues to set at age 94 should be enough for the powers that be to consider what he's saying. I can't sign off today without thanking American Legion Post 1 in Denver for allowing us to record this program there in one of Glenn Stenson's favorite spots. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.